Hi, I'm Lou Dobbs. Welcome to our biweekly podcast. The new Democratic Congress is making progress in its beat-the-clock style first 100 legislative hours agenda. The House has passed bills raising the minimum wage to a livable level, enacting recommendations from the 9/11 Commission, and allowing the government to negotiate with manufacturers for lower prescription drug prices. This Congress has made a laudatory beginning, but it is only a beginning. It's far too early to suggest, let alone conclude, that this House and Senate will be any more representative of the will of the people than the previous. I remain hopeful, but skeptical. I'm skeptical in part because of experience and in part because members of the House so far are simply catching up with their fellow citizens. In raising the minimum wage, the House passed legislation over the objection of two mighty bastions of corporatism, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the editorial pages of the Wall Street Journal. But while overcoming the conservatism of these two social and intellectual drag anchors, the House merely followed the lead of 28 states and the District of Columbia, which have already raised their minimum wage levels. James Madison and our founding fathers would be proud that our republic remains, at least in part, functional and still capable of being public-spirited. Whereas states' rights have at times in our history been the refuge of those committed to the status quo and at times used in behalf of retrograde impulses, the 10th Amendment to the Constitution, which ensures states' rights, now appears to be our brightest hope for an enduring republic. While the U.S. Congress raised its pay 8 times over the past decade, it refused to raise the minimum wage above the current $5.15 an hour level. During that time, nearly 3/5 of our states acted on behalf of working men and women at the lowest wage scales. 10 of those states even tied future increases in the minimum wage to inflation, exhibiting both foresight and a commitment to working Americans, a commitment I hope will be emulated by this Congress and ultimately this president. As more companies drop their employee health care coverage, the number of Americans without health insurance rises each year. Now nearly 47 million Americans, including 8 million children, have no health insurance, and the only action to deal with the crisis has originated with state governments. Former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney last summer advanced the health care debate when he rolled out a proposal to bring mandatory coverage to everyone in his state. California's Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger last week announced a universal health care plan for his state, which would join Massachusetts, Maine, and Vermont in passing such universal coverage laws. 15 other states and the District of Columbia are all considering similar initiatives, despite the costs associated with the plans. It's not enough that the United States possesses the best medical care in the world if all our citizens cannot have access to that care. Even the House passage last week of a plan for lower prescription drug prices doesn't overcome the overwhelming influence of lobbyists and the political power of the healthcare industry. Drug companies, in fact, spent more on lobbying than any other industry between 1998 and 2005. About $900 million, according to the Nonpartisan Center for Responsive Politics. In this particular case, the pharmaceutical industry threatened to stall any larger change to the prescription drug plan. House Democrats produced a more modest reform because the drug lobby wields such tremendous power over both political parties, and both this Congress and this president. The post-100 hours legislative priority will be an issue that the Democratic leadership and President Bush agree upon. Amnesty for illegal aliens and their illegal employers. While the executive branch continues to refuse to enforce U.S. immigration laws and to secure our borders and ports, and the legislative branch resists the will of the people and defers to the corporate interests that all but own both political parties, our local and state governments will have taken action. Both New Mexico and Arizona have declared states of emergency because their borders with Mexico are being overrun by illegal immigrants, and voters of Arizona have passed 5 state initiatives to curtail illegal immigration. 5 states, Florida, Alabama, California, North Carolina, and Arizona, have all entered into agreements with the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency to train and deputize local authorities to arrest illegal aliens. In Colorado, a new law requires contractors to certify they don't employ illegal aliens or face stiff fines. In Georgia, businesses can no longer claim wages of illegal aliens as a business expense. Those represent just an incredibly small sliver of laws and measures passed in response to the federal government's failure to take action. Even some local governments finally have decided enough is enough. Citizens in places like Hazleton, Pennsylvania, Avon Park, Florida, Escondido, California, and Farmers Branch, Texas have all passed local ordinances that would punish landlords and businesses that rent to or employ illegal aliens. We can only hope the federal government follows the lead of our state and city governments and finally takes action to secure our borders and ports and enforce our immigration laws. The genius of our founding fathers is always clearest when this nation faces a crisis. It appears the often unappreciated 10th Amendment in our Bill of Rights will play a considerable role in our nation's salvation. I'm Lou Dobbs. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon with our next podcast. If you have a question or a comment, please feel free to email me at lou@loudobbsradio.com.
This podcast has been brought to you by
Office Depot, taking care of business.